When I left that sea, a wave moved ahead of the others. She was tall and light. In spite of the shouts of the others who grabbed her by her floating skirts, she clutched my arm and went leaping off with me. I didn't want to say anything to her because it hurt me to shame her in front of her friends. Besides, the furious stares of the larger waves paralyzed me. When we got to town, I explained to her that it was impossible, that life in the city was not what she had been able to imagine with all the ingenuousness of a wave that had never left the sea. She watched me gravely. No, her decision was made. She couldn't go back. I tried sweetness, harshness, irony. She cried, screamed, hugged, threatened. I had to apologize. The next day, my troubles began. How could we get on the train without being seen by the conductor, the passengers, the police? It's true, the rules say nothing in respect to the transport of waves on the railroad, but this very reserve was an indication of the severity with which our act would be judged. After much thought, I arrived at the station an hour before departure, took my seat, and, when no one was looking, emptied the tank of the drinking fountain. Then, carefully, I poured in my friend. The first incident arose when the children of a couple nearby loudly declared their thirst. I blocked their way and promised them refreshments and lemonade. They were at the point of accepting when another thirsty passenger approached. I was about to invite her too, but the stare of her companion stopped me short. The lady took a paper cup, approached the tank, and turned the faucet. Her cup was barely half full when I leaped between the woman and my friend. She looked at me in astonishment. While I apologized, one of the children turned the faucet again. I closed it violently. The lady brought the cup to her lips. "Ah, this water's salty," the boy echoed her. Various passengers rose. The husband called the conductor. "This man put salt in the water." The conductor called the inspector. "So you've put substances in the water?" The inspector called the police. "So you've poisoned the water?" The police in turn called the captain. "So you're the poisoner?" The captain called three agents. The agents took me to an empty car amidst the stares and whispers of the passengers. At the next station, they took me off and pushed and dragged me to the jail. For days, no one spoke to me, except during the long interrogations. No one believed me when I explained my story, not even the jailer, who shook his head, saying, "The case is grave, truly grave. You weren't trying to poison children." One day, they brought me before the magistrate. "Your case is difficult," he repeated. "I will assign you to the penal judge." A year passed. Finally, they tried me. As there were no victims, my sentence was light. After a short time, my day of freedom arrived. The warden called me in. "Well, now you're free. You were lucky. Lucky there were no victims. But don't let it happen again, because the next time, you'll really pay for it." And he stared at me with the same solemn stare with which everyone watched me. That same afternoon, I took the train, and after hours of uncomfortable traveling, arrived in Mexico City. I took a cab home. At the door of my apartment, I heard laughter and singing. I felt a pain in my chest, like the smack of a wave of surprise when surprise smacks us in the chest. My friend was there, singing and laughing as always. "How did you get back?"
"Easy.
On the train, someone, after making sure that I was only salt water, poured me into the engine. It was a rough trip. Soon I was a white plume of vapor. Then I fell in a fine rain on the machine. I thinned out a lot. I lost many drops." Her presence changed my life. The house of dark corridors and dusty furniture was filled with air, with sun, with green and blue reflections, a numerous and happy populace of reverberations and echoes. How many waves is one wave? And how it can create a beach or rock or jetty out of a wall, a chest, a forehead that it crowns with foam? Even the abandoned corners, the abject corners of dust and debris, were touched by her light hands. Everything began to laugh, and everywhere white teeth shone. The sun entered the old rooms with pleasure, and stayed in my house for hours, when it had already abandoned the other houses, the district, the city, the country. And some nights, very late, the scandalized stars would watch it sneak out of my house. Love was a game, a perpetual creation. Everything was beach, sand, a bed with sheets that were always fresh. If I embraced her, she would swell with pride, incredibly tall like the liquid stalk of a poplar. And soon that thinness would flower into a fountain of white feathers, into a plume of laughs that fell over my head and back and covered me with whiteness. Or she would stretch out in front of me, infinite as the horizon, until I too became horizon and silence. Full and sinuous, she would envelop me like music or some giant lips. Her presence was a going and coming of caresses, of murmurs, of kisses. Plunging into her waters, I would be drenched to the socks, and then, in the wink of an eye, find myself high above, at a dizzying height, mysteriously suspended, to fall like a stone, and feel myself gently deposited on dry land, like a feather. Nothing is comparable to sleeping rocked in those waters, unless it is waking, pounded by a thousand happy, light lashes, by a thousand assaults that withdraw, laughing.